I've got Paul Trooper on the line. He's the Deputy Officer of the Coast Guard. Hello, Paul.
Good morning, Pat.
How are you? There has been a problem of late with Chinese lanterns causing difficulties because people, the Coast Guard, are being phoned up to say that there are flares going off in the area. Is that right?
Yes, there has been some issue with it, all right, especially kind of over the darker winter nights.
Yeah.
When people have mistaken Chinese lanterns for distress flares.
Right. How close do they look to distress flares, Paul?
Well, at a certain point, they'd look fairly similar. In other words, when a flare is at the top of its flight and it looks static, it would look the same as a Chinese lantern. But if you watch carefully, the characteristics of a flare are totally different. Mm-hmm. From that of a lantern. A lantern would just float in a line across the sky.
Yeah, but members of the public wouldn't be able to discern between both either, would they?
Which?
Members of the public wouldn't be able to tell the difference, basically.
Well, if they watched carefully, they could. Because with a flare will rise kind of from, obviously, sea level up to a height, and then it will drop. Whereas a Chinese lantern will tend to stay at the same level. So, like, a flare will have an arc, basically. Whoever fires it off from the sea, it'll go up, it'll kind of ignite, it'll stop for a second, and then it'll gradually drift down towards the sea. It won't stay up, whereas a Chinese lantern would tend to stay up.
And they kind of keep going for about 20 minutes or so, is that it?
No, a flare won't last for 20 minutes.
The lantern will last for 3 minutes. The lantern.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure. I think lanterns could last for 20 minutes or longer even. You know, I mean, depending on how long they've been in the air when somebody spots them.
Okay, this problem has been on the increase over the last 3 years. Is that right?
It has, because, I mean, I suppose up to 3 years ago, nobody kind of had heard of Chinese lanterns, and now they've become quite popular. And, like, people let them off at parties and they let them off on birthdays and kind of occasions, you know, so it's become quite popular to do it.
Yeah. But I take it that the Coast Guard would be advising people not to use them near the coast or near water. Is that right?
That would be the advice, yes. Kind of just be aware of when you're doing it. And if you are close to water when you're doing it, maybe just give the Coast Guard a ring and say, we're about to let off a couple of Chinese lanterns, so that they will know. I mean, because unfortunately, every time somebody phones in that there's a flare sighting, they have to investigate it.
Yeah.
That's their responsibility, and it could be a flare, and then if you didn't investigate it, you know, there'd be trouble, so... Everyone has to be investigated.
I know, and it's such a waste of the Coast Guard's time if it's a false alarm. Tell us what happens if there is a call and the Coast Guard have to go out.
Well, let's say, as a case in point, last Saturday night, a member of the public phoned in that they saw a flare over Dublin Bay. So they get onto the Coast Guard Marine Coordination Centre. So what they will do is they will kind of phone the air traffic control in the airport and just say, have the plane seen anything? They'll contact any ships that are anchored in the bay and ask them if they've seen anything. They'll contact Dublin Port, ask if they've seen anything. And then they'll probably contact us and ask one of our volunteers to go down to the coast and have a look and just see if we can see anything untoward. And report back to them.
Yeah.
So that's basically kind of what would happen.
So if there is a call, whether it be a false alarm or the real thing, it takes about three to six members to be dispatched to attend that. Is that right?
No. In fairness, it wouldn't. I mean, let's say they would only we'd only send one or maybe two members to an incident like that. We wouldn't send more than that, but I mean, because the coordination centre would have done a lot of the work, as I said, by contacting ships and contacting the air traffic control and all of that, so they would have a lot of the groundwork done. If they thought it was serious and there was more than one report, let's say if three or four people phoned in, well, then they would scale it up a bit and they might send more people to investigate, yes.
Right, okay. Paul, well, tell us a bit about the Hoth Coast Guard Rescue Team. What responsibility, what area are they responsible for?
Well, we basically cover an area from the Liffey to north, the Malahide Estuary. That would basically be our area of responsibility. And we are a cliff rescue unit. We're a search team, and we're also a boat team. So we're kind of a multidisciplinary team. We're based in Howth. We're all volunteers. And we're on a pager system, so if there's an incident, we're paged and we assemble at the station, and we go to wherever the incident is.
Right. Okay. And is it true that there are 50 coastal rescue stations? That's around the coast of Ireland, is it?
There are 50 coastal rescue stations around the coast of Ireland. That is correct. There's about 904 volunteers manning. Well, we don't man the stations. The stations are unmanned. We would just kind of go to them when the needs arise.
Yeah, and you've got they have four rescue helicopters. Is that right?
There are four rescue helicopters. Now they are operated full time. There's one in Dublin, there's one in Sligo, there's one in Shannon, and there's one in Waterford. And then there's a spare one just in case any of those break down. But they're kind of 24/7, 365 days cover for with the helicopters. But they'd be full time, and it's operated by a company called Canadian Helicopters on behalf of the Department of Transport.
Right, and I noticed too also that the Coast Guard have a changing role rather than what they normally have. Is that right?
Well, we're heavily involved in safety. I mean, basically we are a safety organisation. So, as well as kind of performing rescues when we have to, we also we have a role in educating the public as to for water safety, and we would spend a good deal of our time doing that. We do school visits. We would have people visit our station. During the summer, we would do patrols where we would hand out safety leaflets and just give safety advice to members of the public, just to raise the awareness of water safety.
And they also attend flooding incidents, like water pump teams in dry suits and stuff like that, yeah?
We have been, we are kind of, if we're requested to do so, we can do and have done. I mean, in the last floods there in October in Howth, we had to attend kind of a house where the kind of the water had come in and it flooded it, and we pumped out the house for them. But normally, I mean, that'd be the role of the fire brigade. But sometimes they're under pressure in incidents like that, so we'd be called in to give a hand. Yes.
Right. Well, Paul, how is the Coast Guard funded on a yearly basis?
Well, we are funded by the Department of Transport. So the Department of Transport pay for, let's say, the capital costs of the equipment that we use, and that, and for our PPE and things like that. And then we are volunteers, kind of, we give up our time freely. So it's basically, we are funded by the government.
But does the Coast Guard do separate fundraising?
No, the Coast Guard do not do any fundraising. And if we're ever offered kind of funds if we perform a rescue, and sometimes families want to give to, as you know, for to thank us for what we've done, we would always recommend that they give it to the Lifeboat, to the RNLI.
Yeah, and what about...
Which are a charitable organisation.
How about maintenance, though? There must be heavy maintenance costs for equipment such as the rescue boats and that sort of thing, and even uniforms and the wet gear. It all has to be maintained and kept up to date. I mean, there's obviously a certain amount of wear and tear, and it has to be replaced and so forth.
Of course it does, yeah. Well, we try to take very good care of our equipment, but the Coast Guard, which is kind of a branch of the Department of Transport, they have a budget for that, and there's planned maintenance programs for all the gear so that they don't wear out, and it's funded that way.
Yeah, the Coast Guard budgets haven't been targeted for reductions or anything like that, unlike a lot of the other budgets that are.
Well, the day-to-day budget for this year hasn't been targeted. That is true. The capital budget has been curtailed, certainly. But I think we're looked upon as very good value for money. I mean, there's 904 volunteers who kind of are available 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, at no cost, other than the cost of providing our PPE and transport, etc.
Well, it's an absolute essential service, Paul. I mean, it can't be done without, you know, really. I mean, it's not one of the services that has the same visibility as, say, the fire service, ambulance service, or the Garda Síochána, but it's there nonetheless, and it's doing an equally important job.
But that is correct. And I mean, our profile is being increased, I mean, year by year. Certainly, you know, 10 years ago, nobody would have heard of the Coast Guard or known anything about them. But we are gradually kind of becoming more visible, and because we're interacting with the public more and we're trying to educate public as to safety and that, we are becoming a more visible entity. You know, and unfortunately, some high-profile disasters and that kind of, you know, bring the Coast Guard into focus.
Yeah. Okay, Paul. We'll have to leave it there. But listen, thanks very much for taking the call, and do keep up the good work. It's such an essential service.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much. And have the message out for people to be safe on the water.
Of course. Okay. Thanks, Paul. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye.